We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome in Upstate. It is a Monday and literally way too hot edition of Straight Up with Sturge. Mark Childress, Mark Sturgis in studio with our good friend Diesel. And just listen, here's the deal. Next three days to 10 days, depending on how hot you like it, just be patient. It is warm out there, Mark Childress.
No rain coming at all? Now, which would be a nice change of pace, but it'd be later, nice every other day to get a little bit of rain.
Later in the week, you know, Thursday is the official beginning of summer. It's also the longest day of the year. It's also my anniversary.
It's mine, too.
You're June 21st as
well? June 21st as well. Hmm. How many years?
It'll be, 21?
Mine is 21 also. Hmm. Well, this is very interesting here.
Would you like to join us
you
for dinner?
You two literally got married on the same day?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Were you married here in Greenville?
Yes. First Presbyterian Church downtown. We didn't
He was
have
born
a
at Second Presbyterian Church.
City View Baptist Church.
Is it like that Berea situation in Wayne's World 2 where you were getting married at the same exact church just on opposite sides of the road?
Man, this is really random.
Dude,
okay. We
didn't have a wedding. We had a full-scale production.
There you go.
And I tried to explain to my daughter last night that our wedding was not our wedding. It was our parents' wedding, and her wedding will be our wedding, and that's just the way it kind of goes. You know what I mean?
I hear you.
No, my dad, my dad had just retired from Cryback, so we kind of flipped things, and we used the reception as sort of a wedding reception slash retirement ceremony.
Very nice and smart. Good.
So, all right. So, Teresa already knows where I'm taking her to dinner Thursday night. If you'd like to join us, we're going to the strip club, Diesel. Literally. The strip club in Greer is a great
I've heard about it. I've heard it's really, really good.
In downtown Greer. For people that go, Sturge. No, we're not talking that. Listen, we're going to have some fun today. Of course, we're going to give you our U.S. Open thoughts after the weekend. Brooks Koepka becomes the second golfer in the modern era to win back-to-back U.S. Opens behind Curtis Strange, another former ACC golfer. And then at 4:37-ish, we'll talk with our buddy T.J. Reeves. He is the sideline reporter for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but he also, I think, completed about 10 different radio shows with the U.S. Open and the golf tournament. So we'll get his thoughts about both the golf tournament and Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers. And then in the middle hour, at 5 p.m. hour, got a lot of college football things that we're going to get into, which includes this today. We did Friday, the ACC coaches and how Bill Bender listed them. We will go through the SEC today, as well as some other things in college football to look forward to, including gotta love it when a former coach tweaks the current coach at a certain school. And then in the final hour, we'll get into some NFL as well as maybe Major League Baseball, because your Atlanta Braves or our Atlanta Braves are 3.5 games up. And, of course, the College World Series going on as well, including some information Clemson baseball fans may find interesting. So outside of that, it's your show, 844-GSP-ESPN. But, you know, one thing that – I remember going back to the baseball draft, was it 2 weeks ago or last week? It's in the Super Regionals when they had the draft.
Yeah, a couple weeks ago. Yep.
You know, most people said, oh, Seth Beer, former Clemson Tiger outfielder. You know, not the greatest fielder. That's a miss or, you know, that's a home run or strikeout type of first-round draft pick. Did you see this weekend, I think it was Friday night, his first at-bat as a professional up in New York? Gone. Go ahead and beer me in my first at bat in the professional baseball. listen, the guy will make an adjustment, and if nothing else, he's with the Houston Astros, who have now won, what, 11 consecutive games to prove that they are the best in the American League again this year. They have this thing called the DH as well.
Yeah. It took Seth a real long time to adjust to those wooden bats, right? One at bat, and he's hitting one out.
And it wasn't a softball. It was an opposite field drive.
Oh, he absolutely crushed it. He was super excited about it in the post game, which I thought was really cool. And, again, you can't judge it all from one. But, man, talk about coming out hot. A couple of people were questioning, like you said, Seth Beer's kind of without a position because they don't know where they'll play him from a fielding perspective. But that bat, he's got so much upside. You just see him in the major leagues in a couple of years doing that on the regular.
All right, so we had Father's Day this weekend. You played golf with Richmond on Saturday. I heard you left a few divots out there at the Furman University golf course. But did you watch any of this proclaimed World Cup that you're going to be watching so much here over the next month?
Of course. We've got some more good games today. It's on every morning, so why not turn the TV on, Sturge, and enjoy it? And you saw the Mexican fans and their reaction to the win over Germany the other day, and I think it registered on the Richter scale or something down in Mexico.
I mean, if that's not the epitome, I felt the earth move. I mean, Mexico City has suffered from several major earthquakes over the last, 50 to 100 years, so they are seismographs all over, and when they took the lead 1-0 with, 30 minutes into the game, and they made that hold up, which was as shocking as anything. Literally, the seismographs around Mexico City registered the Mexican soccer fans jumping up and down in celebration of that goal. And listen, you know, a lot of people said about Germany, both their starters and their backups, if they split the teams up, they'd both be in the final 16, if not the final 8. You know, that's not a really good place you want to start with the loss in the World Cup. I'm sure they'll come back. But, you know, there were some shocking outcomes. You know, France got by on, a penalty kick, I believe it was. But, oh, my God, Lionel Messi and the Argentines. I mean, he misses a penalty kick in the second half. And, you know, Iceland gets a tie. It's overreaction just like we did on Friday to a certain extent when we went, wow. That round could have won DJ Dustin Johnson the U.S. Open, and guess what? Didn't do that.
Man, Dustin played two. Everyone can be excused of a bad round on Saturday with the conditions, but he did not play all that well yesterday and just down the stretch couldn't make the big putts. I mean, there were a number of times on the backside yesterday, I believe three different times, where Koepka and DJ both had par putts in the 6 to 12 foot range. Koepka putted first all three times. Made all three. Dustin putted after that, so he was closer. Missed all three. You say it comes down to a shot or two. Putting on the backside and scrambling on the backside. And Koepka just looks like a dadgum assassin out there now at these U.S. Opens. Wow. So cool, so calm and collected. It's the strength of his game, and he is rising up the charts. There's so many great American golfers right now. You forget about Koepka a lot. He needs to be closer to the top. He is good.
I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I'm sorry. DJ and Koepka are bad for the game of golf. And it's not that they brought in a workout routine when Fuzzy Zeller used to drink beers and smoke cigarettes after the game. The golf courses were not meant to be played the way these guys can now pound the golf ball. And here's what I mean. This one, it just turned my stomach the other day. This was actually yesterday. He had 179 yards to get over the bunker, and he hit 9-iron.
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. I mean, these courses were not meant to be played that way. That's why I say the only thing golf can do is deaden the golf ball. I'm not saying that I need to be from 179. You need to be like me hitting a 4, possibly, you know, trying to smoke a 5. But come on, a 9-iron, a lofted club from more or less almost 200 yards like that, that's not the way these courses were meant to be played back in the day. And I it's no fun for me to watch these guys play golf because it's boom it and then hit a wedge. And that's not the way. Now, you can deaden the golf ball and bring that back in, but I don't know if that will ever happen. But I can't fathom. You go back and watch a Hell Irwin when he shot plus 7 back in the 70s to win a U.S. Open. These guys were still hitting 4 and 5 irons in on the second shot. And I'm sorry, the game was not meant to be played like the way DJ and Koepka play it. But to their credit, you can do it.
So when John Daly broke into the scenes in the early 90s, he was hitting the ball like these guys are today. The difference is now the equipment's gotten better, mm-hmm. and these guys are – I mean, Brooks Koepka is built like a dadgum safety in the NFL.
They work
out. He and DJ were in the gym. Like they said Koepka was like lifting 285 on the mm-hmm. bench that morning and then going out and playing that way in the afternoon. These guys are putting in the work. It's not just like, hey, we woke up and now we can kill the ball.
I'm not saying
they
that.
They are fine-tuned athletes.
They are, but that's not the way the game of golf was meant to be played. Pound it and then hit a chip in. I mean, it takes the teeth out of the course. That's why the USGA now has to go out there and do the silly stuff that they did on Saturday, putting pins there on the edge and catching hell for it, and then coming back yesterday knowing, well, we better put these pins in the middle of the green or we're going to be really catching some crap. And that's why it played a lot easier yesterday. And then, you know, Tommy Fleetwood, once he got in at 63, to me, that changed the entire storyline of the tournament and the fact that they were now playing against plus two. They weren't really playing against each other. They were playing against that score that had been posted. And I'm telling you, that 6.5-footer Fleetwood missed on 18 for a record 62 in the U.S. Open. I mean, dude, that's still one of the rounds of major history, in my opinion, especially the way that course was playing this weekend.
Yeah, he was unbelievable yesterday, and I was pulling for him to get the 62, right? You'd always like to see history. And when he made that putt, I mean, I was texting with my brothers-in-law. I felt like Fleetwood was going to win the tournament mm-hmm. when that thing went in. And you figure, hey, the wind's going to start blowing again this afternoon, and only one player beat him. Koepka yep. was the only one that beat him, or he would have hung on to win yesterday. I'm going to disagree with you a little bit, Sturge. I like to see how, I mean, it's hard to hit the golf ball that far.
I don't know.
And I know a lot of it's equipment related. I don't want to see him dead in the golf ball, but they do need to find ways to stretch it out. I mean, the Masters has added, what, like 800 or 900 yards over the last 10 to 15 years?
But
and they're kind of keeping up with the Joneses as far as, you know, the scoring and things like that can go.
But not a lot of courses have that ability to do so. I mean, the right. Masters owns all that. You can't, if you're up against, you know, homes and things of that nature, you just can't do it. And again, I'm tipping my cap to them. I'm not mm-hmm. saying that. I got tired of hearing driver 9-iron, driver wedge, driver that's not the way Shinnecock Hills was supposed to be played. And the USGA can completely screw up a golf course with their decision making, then make them play a lighter golf ball when it comes to this situation. That's the only answer for it that I see, because eventually we will have guys driving a 410 yard green. And then the game of golf is it's just got you, as we like to say, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube.
But even hitting the ball that far, Sturge, the winner was plus one. If they lightened the golf ball and put him out there yesterday, the winner would have been plus 11.
Well, then that's why I say the USGA doesn't have to come back and be the asshole that they have been so many of the, like Sergio Garcia saying, listen, not knocking them, but this is supposed to be one of the three premier tournaments, and this is multiple times in the last 5 years the USGA's gotten it wrong.
Yeah, I would agree with you on that.
I think you could, you know, if they, hey, listen, they're actually hitting a 6-iron in over that bunker instead of a 9-iron, then maybe I don't have to have tough day on Saturday. Once a year, they would, the country club, they would go put every pin placement in the toughest hole location on the course and call it tough day.
Yep.
That's essentially what they did on Saturday at Shinnecock Hills. All right, we'll open up the phone lines when we come back. We'll continue talking the U.S. Open. Do you like how this course played? Do you like them being able to bang it? And some other thoughts, because I tell you, Tiger, you're a little bit in denial, no doubt about it. So Brooks Koepka pulls off back-to-back U.S. Opens. That's only the second time in modern history that that's ever happened. Curtis Strange did it last back in 1988, 1989. But that's not going to be the lasting storyline from this U.S. Open, Mark Childress. It's going to be what took place on Saturday. And I'm not talking about everybody getting on the USGA about, you know, the course setup where they sat there and said, well, we didn't expect the wind to blow that much in the afternoon. If you go back and look at the weather reports, it did exactly what it was supposed to do. So I wasn't buying that argument. They were hoping that course and the greens were going to hold up, and it didn't. And You know, and that became the storyline on Saturday instead of the golf. But outside of that, it was what Phil Mickelson did. And what people do on Twitter and what people do all the time in daily life happened on Saturday and Sunday. And they overreacted to what Phil Mickelson did. No, it was not this damaging thing for the game of professional golf. Phil did what a lot of us would have done at some point and just got frustrated and reacted to it. Now, he could have handled the post-round comments a little bit better. But come on, people. Quit overreacting that what Phil Mickelson did on Saturday was just it was immature, but quit overreacting to it.
So you're upset that DJ and Koepka are hitting the ball too far, but you're not upset at what Phil did.
I am upset with it. I just don't think it's one of the biggest travesties that's ever happened. I mean, I think the USGA, the proper thing, would have probably eliminated him from playing the fourth round, disqualified him. But, you know, I think there was a moment in Phil Mickelson's mind there on Saturday when it came to, after, number one, its age, as you said earlier. Number two, I think there's a realization, crap, I'm never going to complete the career slam on these type of U.S. Open golf courses.
Yeah, I think part of it, Phil's not winning another major, more than likely. I mean, he's older than Jack Nicklaus was when he won in 86, and I know the game's different today, and Phil's game is different, and he's in better shape and all those kind of things. I don't think he's ever winning another major. It bothered me just because it was unusual for Phil. I mean, he's been in the spotlight for so long, and you've never really seen him lose his cool like that. And then to lose it on a Saturday when you're, what, 14 shots back in the U.S. Open, I was disappointed from that perspective. But, man, there were some sports writers wagging their fingers at Phil Mickelson. Withdraw for the good of the game and all this stuff on Saturday night and Sunday morning that I thought was ridiculous.
I thought the actions were childish. I thought some of the reactions were more childish, all right, because I made this comment to you. This is what I equated it to. Number one, I'm not buying that, oh, I know what the rules of the game were and, you know, this much and blah. No, I think I think there's a certain accurate connotation to the phrase fake Phil, and we saw it after the when he said, well, if you think that, you know, tough, get over it, blah, blah, blah. No, it's had it been John Daly, they would have withdrawn him. They would have DQ'd him from the tournament. Yeah. That much I am pretty much sure of. But to me, it's like, all right, it's not as big of a penalty in college football in the NFL, but the offense has the right play called. You get faked out of your jock as a defensive back, and you're getting ready to be burnt for a 60-yard touchdown pass. All you have to do, your only recourse of action is to reach out and grab the wide receiver and pull him down to the ground and take a penalty call. Dude, that's cheating. If you want to think about it, but guess
that's
what?
A good parallel.
It's a smart play because you didn't cost your team a touchdown. You only cost them a 15-yard penalty or, in the NFL, a spot foul. But the reality is you just got burnt. You know what the ruling is, so you reached out and you used the rules to your advantage.
To your point, I don't think Phil had thought through it that much.
Neither
I think he just went down there and slapped at it out of frustration. And I like your term childish. I like that aspect of it. I think that's a good way to put on it. Hey, Phil's a politician, right? I mean, he knows how to play to the crowd. I didn't have as big a problem, I guess, with what he said afterwards on Saturday that you did. But I was just coming back to disappointed. I mean, Phil, you're better than that. You are one of the top two or three personalities in the game. It's still probably, even with all the stuff going on today, it's what's Tiger doing, what's Phil doing, what's everybody else doing. And knowing you're in the spot like that and doing it, I think you said something before the show. He had a chance to humanize himself, right? Everybody's been there when you're on the course and you're like, I just three putted for the fourth straight hole, and you want to get up there and slap at the ball. And sometimes you do. You'll hit it 3 feet by and you're like, I'm giving myself that. And you knock the ball off to the side. He could have just said, hey, man, I screwed up. And it's happened to everybody, right? Ha ha, you know, a little elbow nudge, and everybody moves on.
Yeah, again, whether he knew the rules or not, I don't know. I'm not buying that argument. But like I said, you know, we've heard this tagline for so many years, fake Phil, fake Phil. Well, this would have been a chance to go, yeah, dude, my eyes rolled up in the back of my head, blind rake, because we've all been there. Happy Gilmore took the rake and broke it in half and put it back in the woods so it could be potentially back with his mother and father. You know what I mean? So if Happy Gilmore can throw a rake in the woods, then by God, we can all lose it for a minute. But, you know, give me more Frank Nobilo on the Golf Channel and less Brandel Chamblee. All right. I just want to punch Brandel Chamblee. You know, some of these guys making this out to be just the worst thing that they've ever seen. This will follow Phil Mickelson for the rest of his life and career. This isn't like he knowingly cheated on his scorecard. He knew he made a double bogey, or moved the ball in the rough,
when people weren't looking.
Or like my buddy used to do. We'd always go back and look at his shots from the rough and find a tee in there. You know what I mean? So this wasn't the same kind of cheating. So these little guys like that and in the media, quite frankly, need to back off. Again, it was childish. He could have handled it better. And to his credit, he texted one of the bigger golf writers on Saturday night and said, listen, I get it. This was not my best moment, but it's now in the past.
After you said a tee in the rough, I blacked out after that. How have I never thought of this before? So he'd sneak a tee in the rough? Wow.
If nothing else, the ball was sitting up just a little. It didn't mean it was sitting on the tee. It just meant it was actually sitting up a little bit higher.
That's brilliant. I've never thought about that as an angle before.
I mean, so it wasn't the same amount of cheating is going on. But my question is, can we have another one of these U.S. Opens at Shinnecock Hills? Because the USGA has twice now gotten it wrong. To what extent is up to you, the individual. But the storyline on Saturday became about the course. The storyline 14 years ago in the final round became about the course. So they didn't have the chance to correct it 14 years later. It still happened now to their credit. It happened on Saturday, so they realized we got to be extremely careful on Sunday, and they must have watered the hell out of that course. And there were a lot of center pin placements. So I didn't have a problem with that because that meant you're going to go out there and somebody's going to shoot this thing. And Tommy Fleetwood proved that you could go low with that 63. But I'm not sure you can have another one at Shinnecock Hills, at least for the same amount of time, if not longer, and do something about those fronts on the green, because that's where it becomes unfair.
Yeah. So there are four golf majors. Three of the golf majors know what they are. You've got the Masters. It is in the slot, right? That's the best tournament of the year. They always do it right. The British Open is based on tradition. They go through the same rotation of courses for the most part for the last, 80, 100 years. And the PGA is what it is. They pick new courses. They try to showcase new venues. You're going to go low at the PGA. The courses aren't tricked out. The U.S. Open does not have an identity anymore. It's gone way under par a couple of times over the last 5 years. Now they try to flip it back in the other direction. The leadership, it can be questioned almost every year. You know, DJ got, disqualified essentially, or a two-shot penalty that kept him out of a playoff a few years ago. There's all kinds of issues that are going on at the USGA every year. There's no leadership and there's no identity. They got to figure out what they are. And they've got to get it fixed quick, and then they've got to get committed to it. And until they do that, it's not going to get any better.
Listen, if you screw up Pebble Beach next year, then it's on you, the USGA, because that is like America's course. There is no reason to go trick that thing up. And if, by God, Tiger Woods, or not Tiger, but somebody else goes 15 under because they just dominated the course, then live with it.
Yep.
Well, I've got a poll up on the ESPN Upstate Twitter page right now. What do you prefer doing now that we're seeing these scores going down and down and down? Do you prefer deadening the golf balls, lengthening the courses, or doing nothing at all? So if you want to get in that poll, go to @ESPN Upstate on Twitter.
It's going to be interesting.
Don't side with Sturge. It's not deadening the golf ball. You can't do that.
Why not?
You can't. Why would you?
Why? All right. How about they took square grooves out of the clubs a few years ago because the pink clubs were, I mean, my God, you shouldn't be able to spin a golf ball out of the rough like that. So they took square grooves away. Why not take some of the velocity of the golf ball away?
Well, would you rather them detune the golf clubs? Because they've tuned up these clubs so much to the point over the years with lighter materials and different grooves and all these different things they could do to these clubs. It made the clubs better and better and better and better.
But they've also lengthened all these courses. I mean, Shinnecock Hills is, I'm guessing, I'll go and look at the break, is playing 700-800 yards longer now than it did when Hale Irwin won it 30 years ago.
All right,
I guarantee you they've lengthened that course significantly since then to counteract that.
However, I don't think, if you do the math, I don't think the length that they've been able to lengthen it has kept up with ball, golf balls, golf clubs, and things of that nature as well. So, again, I think you could find a happier medium and not let the USGA try to trick things up the way they have done. All right, real quickly, we have a famous family here in the upstate of South Carolina. We'll let you know that what the Haas family is up to as well. But when we come back, it's our buddy TJ Reeves. Number one, he is totally in touch with the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills after covering it. Plus, he's a Tampa Bay Buccaneers sideline reporter, and there is the report out today. The NFL is not letting this Jameis Winston incident from last year go away. So we'll talk with our buddy TJ Reeves of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers when we return. All right, welcome back in. We are live in the studio. Mark Childress, he's sitting over here to my left. And, of course, Diesel is getting connected with our buddy. And Diesel, anyway, TJ Reeves is going to be with us here in just a second. He is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers sideline reporter. Also does a lot of podcasting. And I tell you what, I get to take my daughter to sometimes I go real quick and I can correct this problem. All right.
Yeah, so, no problem. We're trying to get TJ Reeves up. He's sidelines for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. He was also with the U.S. Open at Shinnecock Hills this past week. We'll see if he sides with either myself or Sturge in this debate that we're having about Shinnecock Hills. But I'm excited to start talking some NFL. And I'm curious. I love the NFL and I love football. But from these OTAs, Sturge, what can you tell and not tell? Can you watch these early season, you know, scrimmage practices and see these new players coming in? Is your eye sharp enough to be able to determine, hey, that guy looks like he's going to fit in fine. Oh, man, they made a mistake here. I'm curious if TJ can.
The only thing that I caught out of Panthers training camp was simply the fact Christian McCaffrey a little bit more comfortable, a little bit more knowing what his role is headed into year number two. And that's a lot of success right there, is just simply knowing what your role is. And outside of that, listen, the veterans know how to get through without, yeah, you know, showing too much or doing too much. So this is a chance for some of the rookies and all. But, you know, if you got some installation to do, if you're a new coaching staff, or quite frankly, try to figure out if you're a Cleveland Brown why you hadn't been successful for the last 2 years at 1-35, then these OTAs are a heck of a lot more important for them than they are New England or Atlanta or some of those teams.
Yeah, and I like, you know, taking a look at the rookies. You want to see them in your team colors and what it looks like, any fresh faces that came over via trade. Obviously, you like seeing players like Deshaun Watson that have been out for injury, trying to head back in the right direction. You see him out there without the knee brace, and you breathe a sigh of relief if you're a Clemson or a Texans fan. So lots to watch, but I'm not sharp enough, and I feel like I know football really well and watch so much NFL over the years. There are people out there that are good enough to be able to look at these OTAs and to be able to know, right? Hey, that guy's a half step slow. He's never going to make it on the team. That guy's a lot quicker, a lot bigger than we thought. Man, we're seeing things out of him that we didn't think that he had. I'm interested to see what how sharp TJ's eye is on those Buccaneers.
And here's the deal. You look at it from the NFC South. I mean, you know, the Panthers have been successful. The Falcons have been successful. Now you've got the Saints and what, yep, they're doing with, uh-huh, Drew Brees. So now it's time to answer up when it comes to Jameis Winston and the Buccaneers. But first thing we're going to do is get our buddy TJ Reeves' opinion of the U.S. Open, because TJ, what's going to be the lasting storyline of this Open? Phil Mickelson, the USGA, or Brooks Koepka becoming the second golfer in the modern history to go back-to-back at the U.S. Open?
First of all, good to be with you.
Yes.
Sorry for the delay. I'm glad you're feeling better. And
I don't know that
the USGA, Sturge, made anybody feel any better, because didn't they tell us that 14 years ago was not going to happen again, mm-hmm, with the course being burned up and being unable to hold balls on the green? And look, I realize not everybody's a golf fan, but this is the equivalent on a larger scale. This would be a bigger deal if, like, the field is unplayable in the second half of the Super Bowl, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're somehow playing some other big event and they've screwed up something within their control. This is the USGA's big event. How in the world can, for the second time at that same course, you not get it straight on how fast the greens are going to be, and the best players in the world are not just challenged to shoot 70 or 72 or 74, but my God, Ricky Fowler and Phil Mickelson shooting in the 80s when they're in contention with a chance to maybe do something on Saturday because of the course, and it's obvious that the course had more to do with it because Fowler shoots a 65 on Sunday, 19 shots better on the same course in the different conditions. So I think the USGA deserves some blame, but the juicier part of this is Phil Mickelson. And Sturge, what was that? I don't understand at this moment. It was a meltdown, but it's one of those things that did he realize after the moment, I got to come up with a really good reason. I got to come up with a good reason as to why I just did this. And so now you're going to act like, oh, I knew that was a two-shot penalty when I was doing that. I don't think so. No. I think he snapped. So I think to answer your question, we'll remember that more. The course is always hard at the U.S. Open, but I think we'll remember Phil more.
All right, two-pronged question. I mean, I thought Phil got it wrong in the post-round interview. That was his chance to go, listen, you know, all of us have had that happen on the course where our eyes rolled up in the back of our head, and I lost it, and all of us casual golfers would identify with that. So I think he was wrong there. Second part of the question, can they go back to Shinnecock Hills, one of the country's greatest golf courses?
Well, on the first part, the USGA has all of these different rules. They set the rules of golf. First of all, can anybody fathom that if he or any other golfer a prominent golfer had pulled something like that at the upcoming British Open, the Open Championship, that the RNA, the Royal and Ancient, where the game was created, would not have disqualified him themselves? And maybe it's just because he's such a big name, the USGA was in fear of, we can't tell Phil Mickelson he's disqualified from the tournament when we don't have a specific rule for this that says you're DQ'd as a penalty and as the punishment. But I would have, you know, he at this point, he's in the World Golf Hall of Fame. He's arguably the second greatest golfer of the last 25 years behind Tiger Woods. He probably is the second greatest golfer. It would have been a magnanimous moment for him to say exactly what you said. I screwed up. I've now had time to think about it. I should never have hit that ball when it was moving to gain an advantage, and I'm just going to withdraw. I have no chance to win this tomorrow anyway on Sunday. I'm 15 shots behind. It's not going to happen. And for the honor of the game and the integrity of the game, I'm going to withdraw. And I think Phil could have gotten away with that. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, unfortunately here, they kind of let him have the excuse, and the USGA didn't force the issue on this, so it's kind of a blackout. As for Shinnecock, they want to come back to that course. They want to have this rotation where they come back to places like Oakmont, smaller courses, trick them out and see what can happen. So it would not surprise me if it gets back in the rotation 10 years from now. We're going to be old men when that happens, but maybe it will get back in the rotation, Sturge.
Hey, TJ, Mark Childress here as well. What does this mean for Brooks Koepka? There's so many great young American golfers. I don't think he's been really viewed in that top tier, but after back-to-back at the U.S. Open, especially how calm he's been in doing it the last 2 years, does this put him right up there with Spieth and Thomas and Dustin?
It has to. When you start talking about Jack Nicklaus never did this, and Arnold Palmer never did this, and Tiger Woods never did this, Curtis Strange is the last one to do it. Ben Hogan's name is also there, but there's only three guys since World War II that have done this. It's an amazing accomplishment. Is he going to go down as an all-time name? I don't know that he is going to go down as an all-time name. Maybe he wins a few more times, and maybe he wins another major championship or two. That might happen. But certainly when you start talking about something that those other names on the list have not done, you got to give Koepka a lot of credit. And his length, his strength, and let's not forget he comes back from a wrist injury that had him sidelined at the beginning of this season. So give him extra credit because he was, and I said this several times during the broadcast, and I don't know about you guys and what you've said, but I love the candor of Paul Azinger, who's one of my who's one of my Florida guys here. He lives in the Tampa Bay area, lives actually south in the Sarasota-Bradenton area, south of Tampa. But he will tell it like it is, and he had some great candor a couple different times of, man, you know, Koepka's going after balls that are in the 18-inch rough with a formerly injured wrist. He obviously has no fear and played that way. And so, you know, give him a lot of credit for being able to conquer the USGA's toughest challenge 2 years in a row when so many others have not been able to put it together over the course of their careers and win the thing twice.
All right, TJ, as again we continue with TJ Reeves. Follow him on Twitter at Buck Sideline Guy. He's the sideline reporter for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers broadcast with our good friend from the Florida State Seminoles, Gene Deckerhoff, and also host of the College Football Playoff podcast. So, listen, interesting news, I guess, if you will, at least up here in Carolina Panthers territory. Jameis Winston remains under investigation from the NFL from a 2017 incident. I mean, can this be a cloud that hangs over the Buccaneers just simply in the fact this is a big year for Dirk Cutter and crew?
Well, and let's be specific about what we're talking about. There was an accusation made against him last November. That accusation became public. This actually goes all the way back to March of 2016, right after his rookie year. And it is a female Uber driver in Arizona who alleges that Jameis Winston inappropriately touched her. And the NFL has been looking into this now for 10 months. This is 10 months later. We're still trying to determine whose side are they believing. Are they believing what she had to say? She lodged a formal complaint with Uber, and Uber actually banned him from being able to ride with them. She didn't press any criminal charges. And look, I don't have any unique insights here. People were asking me about this today, earlier today, when I was out running around. And I've talked to several different people over the course of the last couple of weeks, and the media here, it's a big subject. And league-wide, when you start looking into it, is he going to face suspension? We don't know, Sturgeon Mark. We don't know what the status is because the NFL doesn't ever talk about these things along the way. But you would have to believe now as we sit here on June the 18th and you're about a month away from training camp beginning that the NFL has got to come forward and say this stuff is unsubstantiated, it's unfounded, and we're going to clear him. Or whatever they believe happened, the discipline is this. And they owe that to everybody involved because they've taken 10 months to this point to investigate here. And again, he's a franchise-changing quarterback for the Buccaneers. And you need to know, is he going to be available at the beginning of the season? And 10 months, I mean, it's not like 2 months. It's not like this just when this just came to light last November, everybody wanted to know. And I think a lot of us understood it's going to take a while for them to investigate. It's the NFL. They've gotten some of these wrong by rushing to investigate them. So let's see if in the next few weeks before training camp ever begins, and maybe it's later this week or next week, if there's finally something definitive on what happened here. But there's a lot of uncertainty around Jameis Winston.
All right, final question real quickly. For people that don't know, TJ's Saturday morning ritual is to go have donuts with his twin daughters at Dunkin' Donuts. So I'm driving down Wade Hampton yesterday, and I noticed that we see new cake batter donuts at Dunkin' Donuts. How good, how legit are those?
I have to say that my twins are the donut aficionados, and I am not aware. We were in the Dunkin' Donuts last Friday, and the one that we were in did not offer cake batter donuts. So you are breaking news to me that I have to break to them. These are my 10-year-old daughters. We love to go eat the donuts at Dunkin' Donuts. Free plug for them. They are big fans of the glazed with vanilla frosting, but they love cake batter ice cream, cake batter flavored yogurt. So we might have to go down that road and see about the cake batter donut. Now, you know, I'm a big cake donut fan myself. Blueberry donut, chocolate cake glaze. I don't know about you, Mark, or you, Sturge, on your preference on the cake donuts, but man, we got to look into that. We got to look into that in the Reeves household because the donuts are a big staple of our Saturdays. It's amazing on social media how many people, including you and others. They almost think something is wrong if we're not there having donuts after about two or three Saturdays.
That is correct. Well, listen, TJ, you've been a huge friend for all of us here at ESPN Upstate. We'll be in touch here shortly. I will go on my umpteenth trip back to Lowe's here, take a picture of that sign here in front of Dunkin' Donuts.
I love it. Cake batter donuts. Yep. I love that. I'm glad you're doing much better and back on the airwaves. It's great to have Sturge back on. on ESPN Upstate, and thank you for having me on here to talk a little golf, and it'll be football season before long. You guys have a great summer.
All right, we'll be in touch soon. There's TJ Reeves. Again, just go follow him on Twitter at Buck Sideline Guy. All right, we'll have a real short couple of minutes. It's open phones for the rest of the show. But in this short couple of minutes, man, security people, they might have been the biggest story of the weekend. Welcome back in. It is open phones for the rest of the show till 7 p.m. And, of course, this weekend, you, first of all, is there anything, if they don't take the U.S. Open back to Shinnecock Hills, I won't have a problem with it because New York golf fans, you know, they may, the people up north may make fun of us in the South for being rednecks, but they're the biggest jackwads when it comes to a professional golf tournament I've ever seen in my life. I don't want to ever
Baba
hear
Booey.
Baba Booey, but Dilly
a
Dilly.
A thousand times, yeah.
Or just the fact that last night, it's one thing if they're 12-year-olds back behind the set for the Golf Channel, you know, afterward. But to see 50-year-olds making jerks of themselves back there behind, you know, waving and on the phone like, listen, I will say this much. What a great golf course. But you can keep those golf fans for all I care. That was about the most obnoxious 4 days of golf fans I've dealt with. On television.
Up in New York, Serge, what do you expect? They're getting into their golf. Yeah, that is so gone past its prime back in the day when people yelled, "You to man," and then it's gotten a lot. Mm-hmm. They said, "Drink paint" one time. I don't know what was going on, but that was almost a game in itself, just trying to figure out what those guys were going to talk about or yell or scream out. Or the best was when multiple people were yelling different things at the same time and you couldn't even figure it out.
Yeah, because
so I'm in agreement with you on this.
That makes a difference. But give me more. Listen. If you choose to run out on a field during game action, then guess what? I think they should throw every – from trespassing to whatever. I mean, everything at you. Oh, it was just a moment. I'd had too much drink. Well, then guess what? You don't need to go out and have that much to drink in that situation. But twice this weekend in a CFL game, which I watched some of it the other night to see if Manziel would get in. Mm-mm. Never saw the field. Here comes a dude running out toward midfield, and to his credit, one of the defensive backs absolutely laid this dude out. I'm talking textbook tackle, whole nine yards. Of course, you know, the dude doesn't have any pads on. He's probably going to go, "I'm going to sue the football team for hurting me for that," you know. And then it happened again yesterday at the College World Series. A dumb young Arkansas fan runs down there, and he gets drilled, textbook tackle, by one of the security guys. So, to me, that was one of the best parts of the sports weekend, seeing these jerks.
Did the security guard square up his shoulders and his hips? Yeah. Did he drive straight through him? Yep. There was no targeting on the play?
No, head was up because you can't hit what you can't see. I mean, it was a textbook tackle, and no offense. I hope that guy is sore. I hope his parent, because this one, the one at the College World Series, about 20, 21 years old.
Yeah, and all of his buddies were ready, too. All of his buddies had their phones, and they were cheering him on as he ran out there.
But, you know, that was just a young moment. No, it's not, man. It's not a young moment for you to run out in the middle of a game. Now, one of them, I guess, happened yesterday in a weather delay. Now, I can be a little bit not so fuddy-duddy during but while game action's going on, I'm sorry. Hit him. What was the old cheer? Hit him again. Harder. I mean, I wish one of them would just grab him, stand him up straight, and the other guy would just come around. But, you know, you'd end up getting sued for doing just that. All right, when we come back, one of the more disgusting situations that I've heard in the NFL when it comes to Kellen Winslow II and why the NFL is probably paying attention to Jameis Winston.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.